Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Recycle by Eurosport, a retrospective series on the most compelling, the most controversial, and the most extraordinary riders and races in cycling history. Written by Felix Lowe and narrated by me, Graham Wilgos. In our previous episode, we retold the tale of Andy Hampston, who, with the help of sheep's wool fat and neoprene diving gloves, conquered the snow-capped Gavia to become the first American to win the Maglia Rossa in 1988. This time out, our beer has a Belgian flavour. We're going back to 1937 when defending Tour de France champion Sylvain Mars withdrew from the race with his entire Belgian team while wearing the yellow jersey and just days away from Paris. And no Belgian Tour de France retrospective is complete without Eddy Merckx and the day he remembers most fondly. In 2019, for the second time in history, the Tour de France began in Brussels, this time to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the first of Merckx's 5 wins. But relations with Belgium have not always been so cordial on the Tour. In 1937, defending champion and race leader Sylvain Mars pulled out of the Tour in response to the apparent antagonistic actions of French spectators and partisan decisions made by the race jury. When Mars eventually won his second Tour in 1939, however, there followed a 30-year barren patch for Belgium. For a country to have notched 18 victories overall in the Tour de France, it's an amazing statistic. Merckx alone has 5 Tour wins to his name. Belgium's number of overall victories puts them second only behind the hosts with 36. Belgium, though, have won more green jerseys with 19 than any other nation, 10 more than second place France. And with 471 stage wins, they are second again only to France with 702. The golden era for Belgian cycling, besides Merckx's monumental hegemony, came either side of World War I. Odile Defray and Philippe Thys twice notched wins in 1912, 1913 and 1914. Their successes were followed by Fermín Lambeau twice, Thys again and Léon Sieur. French dandy Henri Pélisser, the peloton's pioneering peacock of white socks, finally ended Belgium's run with victory in 1923. Entering the 1937 Tour, Belgium had won the 2 previous editions through Romain Mars and Sylvain Mars, although the two were not related. After Sylvain's second win in 1939, no Belgian won the Tour until 24-year-old Merckx triumphed on his debut some 30 years later. After the Cannibals' 5 wins, only Lucien Van Impe in 1976 has added to that tally. Back to 1937 and a few notes on the scandal that was the entire Belgian team withdrawing from the race because of what they called French chauvinism. The Belgian riders accused French spectators of throwing stones at them, of wrongly closing train crossings to thwart them, and even of throwing pepper in their eyes. They also accused the French jury of dishing out unreasonable punishments to Belgian riders while being overly lenient to French offenders, most notably Mars' chief rival, Roger Lepaby. Entering the race, Belgium were going for a 3rd straight win, something which riled the hosts. The great Gino Bartali was leading the Tour, but plummeted down the standings after crashing into a river on stage 8. He retired a couple of days later, with Mars in yellow. Mars, whose nickname was Linabo, or the Dwarf, looked a safe bet to retain his title thanks to his strong form and support, so the organisers started to tinker with the race format, cancelling the team time trial, which would have favoured the strong Belgian team, also featuring French climbing ace Félicien Vervaeke and Marcel Black Eagle Kint. Entering the Pyrenees, Lepaby trailed Mars by 2 minutes and 18 seconds, but his weak French team were down to just 6 riders. On the rest day ahead of the mountains, Mars was allegedly approached by a person offering him 100,000 Belgian francs to let his French rival win the race. Mars refused, After all, he was on his way to winning a second tour, a good reason to raise a glass with his chums. Then, things got a little out of hand. Ahead of stage 15, Lepaby was warming up when his handlebars came off in his hand. On closer inspection, he concluded that they had been partially cut through with a saw. With just minutes to get his bike repaired before the start of the stage, Lepaby frantically attached a new set, but it lacked a bead-on cage. And so, the man who was second in the standings started the stage, which featured the fearsome quartet of the Perisuda, Aspan, Tourmalet, and Aubisque, with no water. Although there was no evidence, Lepaby was convinced that the Belgians were responsible for the act of sabotage. Demoralised, he was forced to take on food and drink from his brother, Guy, which cost him a time penalty, for it was against the regulations. Lepaby later said, "It was done by someone close to the Belgians. They were staying in the same hotel. I put new bars on, but they had no bottle cage. I was penalised every time someone handed a bottle up. I lost 5 minutes on the Tourmalet and panicked. I wanted to stop." A mountain spring came to his rescue, and when Mars flatted further up the road, Lepaby was given a lifeline, but he was still almost 7 minutes behind Mars over the summit of the penultimate climb. Somehow, Lepaby eventually caught up with Mars before the finish in Pau, pipping the Belgian in the sprint behind the lone leader, Julien Berendero. He always claimed he made up the time on the descent of the Tourmalet, but the truth was far more sinister. He had accepted pushes from the French fans and had held onto the cars of French journalists on the Aubisque, including that of Félix Levitan, the future director of the Tour. Later, Lepaby confessed that he had encouraged his supporters to lend him their collective helping hands. "I said, I can't stop the crowds pushing me. I'm asking them not to. In fact, I was quietly asking them to push me harder." The Belgians were furious, and yet Lepaby was only penalised 1 minute and 30 seconds, a mere slap on the wrist which further aggravated the yellow jersey and his teammates. When they argued that Lepaby's penalty left him in a better position than he would have been had he not cheated, the French were indignant and threatened to leave the race if the penalty was increased. The upshot? Lepaby now trailed Mars by 3 minutes and 3 seconds with the Pyrenees over. Then, in stage 16 to Bordeaux, Mars flatted and his rival attacked. Mars received help from his countryman Gustave Delors to chase back, but the latter, despite being a two-time winner of the Vuelta, was riding as an individual and not in the Belgian team. Therefore, this was contrary to the rules. Closing in on the Lepaby group, Mars and Delors came to a level crossing just as the signalman lowered the gate after Lepaby had gone through. Dousing fuel on the fire, the local fans threw pepper in the Belgians' eyes. Mars grappled under the barrier and across the tracks to continue the chase, limiting his losses to just 1 minute and 38 seconds at the finish. But, owing to time penalties, his lead was slashed to just 25 seconds. Threatened by the French fans and victimised by the jury, Mars, who felt the railwayman had intentionally lowered the barrier, decided to boycott the race with his fellow Belgians ahead of stage 17 in Bordeaux. He clearly believed he was better off quitting while ahead than letting himself be cheated out of the win by the officials and partisan fans. It was the first time the yellow jersey had quit the Tour in such circumstances. So, what happened next? The row continued well after the race that Lepaby would go on to win as the first rider using a derailleur. In Belgium, supporters protested against the Tour organisation. Within 24 hours, 20,000 protest letters had been sent to a sports magazine that had taken up the cause. After another 10 days, more than 100,000 Belgian francs had been sent to the National Cycling Organisation to support the team. Crowds lined the streets of Brussels as Mars and his teammates came home, while the Belgian Federation ensured that they were paid the same bonuses they would have received had they won the Tour. For his part, while many felt that Lepaby's victory stank, the Frenchman always insisted he would have won anyway. "The remaining stages were flat and filled with time bonuses which would have played into my hands. I was convinced that I had already won the Tour when we were in Bordeaux. I was frustrated by the withdrawal of the Belgians because it deprived me of a victory that would have been more complete and more convincing. I clearly possessed the means to beat Sylvain Mars fair and square." Henri de Grange, the father of the Tour, did not share Lepaby's stance, however, and did not ask the French rider back to defend his crown in 1938. Lepaby is one of only five defending champions never to have raced another Tour, the others being René Potier, Fausto Coppi, Bradley Wiggins, and that man Mars. Although Mars came only 14th when he returned to the race 1 year later, when Bartoli stayed upright and took the spoils, the Belgian eventually won his second Tour in 1939 before the outbreak of World War II ended his career. He later became the manager of the Belgian national team and opened a bar near Bruges called the Tourmalet. As for Lepaby, after following the 1938 race as a reporter, his career ended in 1939 when he broke a kneecap in Bordeaux-Paris. He would, however, remain in the sport as a driver for French television. The spectre of the Belgian walkout would return in 1950, when Bartali's Italian team did the same thing after he felt threatened by spectators who caused him to crash with 1947 champion Jean Robich during the ascent of the Col d'Aspin. Bartali claimed fans subsequently punched and kicked him, with one even threatening him with a knife. Although leading the race at the time, Fiorenzo Magni accepted Bartali's decision and abandoned the tour. The race organizers' suggestion that the Italians should wear neutral grey jerseys so that the spectators would not recognize them fell on deaf ears. As a result, Stage 15, originally scheduled to end in San Remo, was rescheduled to end the other side of the border in Mentone. Later in the same race, the Belgian team felt they had been deprived bonus seconds by the race jury's decision to give second place in Stage 15 to Frenchman Louison Bobé over Stan Ockers. Mars was the manager and protested, threatening to pull the Belgian team if the decision was not overturned. The jury held firm, and Mars backed down. Following Mars' win in 1939, a long fallow period of 30 years followed for the Belgians, until Eddie Merckx burst onto the scene in 1969. Why did it take so long for Belgium to find another Tour champion? Belgian cycling journalist Hugo Korowitz has his theories. There are several reasons, he says. First, we did not have that one huge talent. Second, the fans were more excited by one-day races. Perhaps the Cobble Classics are in the DNA of Belgian cycling fans, and we started to specialise in this area. The French have nearly the same problem now, even though the Tour is more important and more sentimental for them. During those lean Belgian years, Brussels hosted its first Grand Départ in 1958, the year of the World Exhibition. 11 years later, the Tour passed through Brussels too, and a legend was born. After an opening prologue in Roubaix, in which Merckx finished second behind Rudy Ultag, and Stage 1A that took the riders across the border into Belgium, Stage 1B of the 1969 Tour was a 15.6-kilometre team time trial in the Brussels suburb of Woluwe-Saint-Pierre. The route passed the front door of Merckx's parents' grocery store, so it was fitting that the Belgians' FEMA squad won the stage. And, by virtue of a 20-second time bonus for the winners, Merckx donned the yellow jersey in his hometown. It was the first of a record 96 yellow jerseys the Cannibal would amass during his career, and, even though he conceded the race lead for 4 days afterwards, he took the Maillot Jaune back after Stage 5 and wore it all the way to Paris. Merckx's first yellow jersey marked one of the best days of the illustrious Belgian's career, according to Korowitz, who has covered 25 tours for newspaper Het Nieuwsblad. It's the day that Eddie remembers most, he says. He is still emotional when talking about that date, and also when he entered the Velodrome of Vincennes at the end of the 1969 Tour, which he said was the nicest day of his career. Fifty years on, Merckx was present in Brussels to set the riders off at the start of the first stage of the race that also celebrated the 100th anniversary of the yellow jersey. Korowitz says that the Grand Départ rightly attracted huge crowds in Brussels. It's all because of Eddie Merckx, he says, who is, after King Philippe of Belgium, the most popular and well-known person in the country. It's a nice tribute to 50 years ago, and the 100-year anniversary of the yellow jersey gave it extra historical significance. But, with no Belgian having won the Tour for more than 40 years, what does the future hold for the cycling-mad nation? For 15 years, the Federation have been investing in riders who can climb, says Korowitz, citing Bjorg Lambrecht, Remco Evenepoel and Dylan Teuns as part of a generation who can go well uphill. I think we must judge Remco within 5 or 6 years, he says. Then he will still be young, but we will know whether or not he has the skills to win the Tour de France one day. We also have a new generation of powerful riders, with Wout van Aert and perhaps again a top sprinter, like Tim Merlier or Jasper Philipsen. There is much to come. Whichever Belgian rider next wears yellow at the Tour, there's not a chance they'd quit while they're ahead, no matter how they're tested by the race jury. This has been another episode of Recycled by Eurosport, written by Felix Lowe and narrated by me, Graham Wilgos. You can read more from Felix on Twitter at Saddleblaze, and you can hear more from me at Graham Wilgos. Plus, you can follow Eurosport at Eurosport_UK, or you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. Join us for our next episode when we'll be looking back to 1959, the year a Yorkshireman named Brian Robinson won Britain's first stage of the Tour de France. In the meantime, if you've enjoyed this episode, please do subscribe, share, and rate us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.